Weaving the threads of art, culture, and history, Marijke van der Meer creates an oral tapestry.
This program is the first in a two-part tribute to the life and work of the great German poet and statesman, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, who was born exactly 250 years ago this week.
He is a marvelous poet. And you do not have to read more than a few lines of Goethe to realize that he is different from anybody else. He is important because he wrote some of the most widely known of all German poems, widely known well outside the sphere of the German language itself, because they have been set to music by some of the finest composers. He wrote the great poetic image of our modern condition in his play Faust. That is a modern myth to which he has given definitive form. All the other treatments of Faust in the 19th and 20th century are in some way or another, either by derivation or by reaction, related to Goethe's Faust. In that sense, he has told us who we are.
Ich glaube, Goethe wäre nicht sehr, sehr, sehr überrascht in unserer Zeit.
I don't think Goethe would be very surprised by our age. He would fit in the age of globalization. As a citizen of the world, he would stand up for human dignity above all other values and defend the idea of many different people living together.
Und als Verteidiger des Zusammenlebens von vielen, vielen Menschen.
Johann Wolfgang von Goethe was a rare and brilliant talent of the kind that appears only once in every generation. He was the greatest European writer of his age, a leading statesman, and an innovative scientist. But they say that his single greatest creative achievement was his own life.
Goethe was a product of his age, only in the sense that he reacted with extraordinary sensitivity to all the many changes that took place during his long lifetime. And the form that that reaction took, in his case, was literature.
Nicholas Boyle is professor of German intellectual and literary history at Cambridge University in Britain. And he's the author of a monumental new biography of Goethe called The Poet and the Age.
You couldn't say that Goethe was in any sense typical of any of the movements that he experienced, but you will find that virtually everything that happened in European intellectual and indeed political history between the middle of the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th century is reflected in one way or another in his works.
Goethe was born in 1749 in Frankfurt, the coronation city of the German Holy Roman Empire. It was a tremendously prosperous center of trade, and Goethe was born into one of its wealthiest patrician families.
Goethe, muss man sagen, hat viel Glück.
Goethe had the great fortune of being born into a very wealthy family at a time when Germany was not a world power, but a collection of tiny principalities.
But kein Weltstaat gewesen, sondern ein kleiner Haufen von kleinen Fürsten.
Rafik Shami is a Syrian-born writer and scientist who has lived in Germany for 30 years. He is Germany's most successful non-native writer and a well-known commentator on Goethe.
As a student, his father gave him a monthly allowance that was as high as the annual salary of a civil servant. He was privileged, generous, popular, a gourmet and a charmer.
Und ein guter Trinker und ein guter Charmeur.
Goethe studied law in keeping with his father's wishes, and he learned six languages. He was especially drawn to the arts, above all poetry, and he spent much of his youth falling in love and thinking about it. At the age of 25, Goethe published his first novel, and it made him a superstar overnight. Goethe. Werther is the hero of Goethe's first novel, The Sorrows of Young Werther. The book caused a sensation among young people, and Werther became a household name across Europe. The hero and the story of his ill-fated love for Charlotte touched off a new fashion trend and even a spate of suicides. The Emperor Napoleon carried a copy of the novel everywhere he went.
Die Leiden des jungen Werthers, die sind heute so
The Sorrows of Young Werther is as relevant today as ever. It's a short novel, a quick read. It contains a lot of wisdom and as much suspense as a modern thriller. It bothered Goethe that he was always seen as the author of Werther and not of the other 40,000 pages he wrote. All his life he tried to remind people that he had written more than just Werther.
Hatte er gekämpft, dass er auch was anderes geschrieben hat, nicht nur Werther.
The young Goethe did, in fact, soon attract the attention of powerful art patrons. He was invited to join the court of Karl August and Anna Amalia, Duke and Duchess Regent of the tiny state of Saxe-Weimar. It was here that Goethe began his career in public administration. He was appointed to several ministerial posts and the powerful position of Privy Councillor. Weimar remained Goethe's home to the end of his days. No less than Napoleon personally invited him to live in Paris, but Goethe refused.
Goethe knew instinctively, I think, and perhaps even consciously, that his life and destiny lay in Germany and in the German-speaking world, and he would have been a fish out of water in the French-speaking world. Frankly, he would have been out of place in any really large capital city. He didn't go to Paris, just as he didn't go to Berlin or to Vienna, even though those would both also have been possibilities for him at different times in his life.
Suddenly, as if the sun were breaking through, inside the mist to clarity I sighted. Downward where I stood, the vapor drew. Round the woody peaks it rose divided. Oh, how I hoped to welcome first the gleaming made by the gloom it banished doubly bright. The draughts of air in battle still were streaming when I was dazzled by a rush of light.
In Weimar, Goethe helped to usher in a new age of classicism in literature. His work and his presence there drew other thinkers and writers to the duchy, and Weimar soon became known as the German Athens. Alexander Letetzky is an official guide in the town.
So now we see here the summer house or the garden house of Goethe in this park. And in this house he spent the first 6 years, and then the house got too tight, too small for him, because he was already a great statesman. He was maybe some 6 or 7 years later already the second man in this state. He was given a title. He was director of the library, of the theater. So he then moved into a big house in Frauenplan Street. But this house was a favorite house of Goethe because it is located in this park, and Goethe liked nature so much because nature was part of his life, and he has dedicated so many works to nature.
Flower bell peeped from the earth, quickly blossomed in lovable bloom. A tiny bee approached and daintily sipped. No doubt they were made for each other.
And just opposite us is here over the street the house of Charlotte von Stein, of this famous lady-in-waiting, who was a famous lady friend of Goethe and at the same time his muse. But as Goethe came to Weimar at the age of 26 years, he was a bachelor and she was already a married lady. And she was the first lady-in-waiting of the Duchess Anna Amalia. and she was 7 years older than Goethe, and she had 3 children. So that is why this great friendship and love of Goethe, between Goethe and Charlotte, they were for public a kind of a platonic or intellectual friendship. And how it was in reality, well, there are still different opinions about it.
Sutherland of flowering lemon trees. In leafage dark, the golden orange glows. From azure sky, there wafts a gentle breeze. Calm the myrtle, high the laurel grows. No sowit still. Aye, there would I go, beloved mine, with thee.
Partly in order to get out of his impossible relationship with Charlotte von Stein and the constrictions of Weimar, Goethe embarked on a trip to Italy in 1786. The experience of living there for 2 years changed his life and his art. He lived with painters, climbed Mount Vesuvius, collected rocks and plant specimens, and explored the streets and women of the Eternal City. Italy provided Goethe with a sensuous Mediterranean counterweight to northern Protestantism and Germanic mysticism.
Er war ein Mann der Sinne, der Farbe, der Genüsse, der Gerüche, der guten Küche.
He was a man of the senses, color, pleasure, smells, good cooking and of intense living. And he was trapped in Weimar, a quiet northern town marked by the Protestantism of Luther, who hated everything sensual. He even hated color as something that could tempt people to do evil. But Goethe was a cosmopolitan. He was above national borders. He hated it when the Germans were too narrow-minded, too German, too closed. He was the first one to use the term world literature.
Und zu verschlossen waren. Er war ja, wie Sie wissen, der Erste, der diesen Begriff Weltliteratur geschaffen hat.
Once he was back from Italy, Goethe's beautiful townhouse in Weimar became a place of pilgrimage and a center for the exchange of ideas. Today, it is the Goethe National Museum. Art historian Anja Petz is one of the curators in the house.
And this room is the study with two adjoining rooms, with an antechamber and the library. The study itself is a sunny room when the weather's fine, very silent because it looks onto the garden. Goethe mostly worked standing in a very modest, very simple atmosphere, because he thought that luxurious furniture and armchairs and so on would detract him from concentration and pass him into a passive states of mind, and so working standing was for him a part of concentration. In the room are a lot of cabinets for his manuscripts and his archives, then a big table in the middle of the room, which was the place for the secretary, the scribe. Goethe had always a scribe whom he dictated very often also, and there's a little desk in front of the window for his grandson. Grandsons who had to do their homework under their grandfather's eyes here.
So he wrote Faust and many other masterpieces of world literature standing over there in that corner.
Very often he also dictated parts of his poetic works also. For example, the Faust II, the second part of the Faust, was dictated mostly. He wrote here, for example, his autobiography, Poetry and Truth. He wrote the Wilhelm Meister. He wrote the second part of the Faust and other famous things.
Goethe needed a large home to house his vast collection of artworks and the objects of scientific interest that he acquired during a lifetime of exploring nature. He was as interested in the weather, in human anatomy, and in the physics of color as he was in truth, beauty, and the soul. For Goethe, there was no conflict between art and science.
So you dabble in botany, optics. How can you, a poet? Don't you feel better employed touching a sensitive heart? Oh, those sensitive hearts. Any charlatan knows how to touch them. No, let my one joy be this, nature, to touch upon you.
He did not think that it was an easy, perhaps even the end, he didn't think it was a possible thing to know nature as she was. He preferred in later life to adopt the Spinozan notion that God and nature are the same, and to speak of God and nature together as one thing.
Nature, it seems, must always clash with art, and yet, before we know it, both are one. I too have learned their enmity is none, since each compels me, and in equal part.
And nature is as unknowable in the end as God, though in another sense she is as immediate to our senses as the glory of God is manifest to us in a beautiful landscape or in an object of scientific investigation, provided that that science is Goethean and not the modern science, which regards all nature simply as an instrument which can be employed for our own benefit.
For Goethe, science was a quest for the principles of growth and unity in nature, and he tried to imitate nature's own ability to synthesize and reconcile in his writing. For him, there was no separation of matter and spirit. No conflict in diversity, even human cultural diversity. No contradiction between art and religion, between the mortal and the eternal.
To what more noble end our life we use than knowing God and nature, which are one? Firm matter melts, which she as mind renews, and she makes firm what fertile mind has done.
These are the last lines of Goethe's tribute to his young friend, the great poet and playwright Friedrich Schiller. The friendship between these two men resulted in one of the most fruitful and extraordinary collaborations in the history of art. Goethe and Schiller published a literary journal together, and Schiller edited and co-authored some of Goethe's works. And they did this in spite of important differences of age, social background, and political views between the two men. Anja Petz.
I think the biggest difference is that Schiller really, more even than Goethe, wanted to realize in his plays certain philosophical views that the ideal of humanity really is reflected in all his later plays, whereas Goethe's attempts went in the same direction but were even more complex on the artistic side. So his Faust, the second part of his Faust, which later on was his final big work, was really an attempt to bring together romanticism, classicism, and the other streams of literature in the time.
24. Juni, Dank für Ihre ersten Worte.
Letter to Schiller, June the 24th, 1797. Thank you for your initial words on my resurrected Faust. Our opinions will probably not differ much, but it's encouraging to work when one's plans are also reinforced from outside, and your involvement is fruitful in more than one sense.
It was even Schiller who incited Goethe to begin again to work on the Faust. And later on, Goethe gave the manuscripts to Schiller for corrections. I think he wanted an adequate partner for discussion about this play and this very serious attempt to write a completely new sort of play. And Schiller was interested in this project.
Fort, dein Zagen zögert den Tod heran.
Meine Mutter, die Hur, die mich umgebracht hat. Mein Vater, der Schelm, der mich gestern...
Faust was Goethe's masterpiece. For 60 years he worked on it, carrying it around with him on bits and pieces of paper that he kept in a bag. The final result is one of the great classics of theater. The story of a scholar who makes a pact with the devil and ruins the virtue of young Gretchen.
It is rightly called by Goethe a tragedy because Faust experiences things, enjoys them, and destroys them. This happens with Gretchen, the woman that he loves. It happens with his experience of antique beauty when he meets Helena, or Helen of Troy. It happens at the end of his life when he has become a social engineer and a kind of imperialist. All of this is in a sense an achievement, but the result of it is that the very thing that he is experiencing and achieving turns to ashes.
Faust has inspired writers and composers since it first appeared in the early 19th century. In the final scene of the first part of the play, Faust tries in vain to rescue Gretchen from execution. The devil Mephisto triumphantly claims her soul, but heaven has the final say, and the devil summons Faust.
Mir graut's vor dir.
Sie ist gerichtet, ist gerettet. Her zu mir.
Heinrich. Heinrich.
Amen.
Faust is one of the seminal works of modern literature and of a new way of thinking created on the threshold from the 18th to the 19th century. Its premiere coincided with one of the great cataclysms of history, the French Revolution, and the rise to power of Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte.
France's pitiable fate. The great may reflect on its meaning. Yet the little still more ought to consider that plight. True, many great ones perished. But who protected the masses from the masses? Then mob proved the oppressor of mob.
It was only later, when after Goethe had met Napoleon, and frankly also after Napoleon had restored, or appeared to have restored, some kind of peace and order to Europe, that Goethe's views changed. And interestingly, I think that Goethe came to admire Napoleon, not, as subsequent mythology often had it, because he was some great hero who had imposed his will on the world, but on the contrary, because he saw him as a kind of legitimate successor to the Holy Roman Emperor.
Goethe was not a great fan of democracy. He respected tradition and order. His political ideas have in fact come under fire in recent years under the pressure of present-day political correctness. His critics say he compiled secret files for his patron, the Duke, and spied on fellow citizens, including even his friend Schiller. Goethe also reportedly condoned the sale of prisoners as mercenaries for the British, and he said to have approved the execution of a young unwed mother for killing her baby, under circumstances very similar to those of his own heroine, Gretchen. How does one reconcile all these allegations with Goethe's ideals of universal humanism?
Well, frankly, I think a lot of this is nonsense. We have to remember that in the 18th century, things looked very different from the way they look to us now. In terms of the particular incident that you're referring to, we must remember that all Goethe was voting in favour of was that the law should take its course. The woman had been found guilty and sentenced by another tribunal. And Goethe believed in the rule of law, and he was acting simply as one whose job it was to uphold the law in that case. Goethe was a man of whom it was said at the time, and in private, by those who knew him well, that he had never deliberately done harm to anyone.
Wenn ich nicht das ganze Kunstwerk von ihm gewusst hätte,
if I were not familiar with his artistic works and if I had only read an authentic biography, that alone would be enough to make me a fan of Goethe. The way he enjoyed life. He even organized balls for children, I discovered. Goethe, the great statesman, always had time for children, organized parties that the parents were not allowed to attend. That was Goethe, the statesman who often didn't have time for visiting dignitaries. For example, the secretary of the Russian Tsar arrives and he says, "Sorry, I have no time."
Goethe's many love affairs with women have also come under scrutiny from feminists, and in general it is said that he used people. Others will argue that people wanted to be of use to Goethe because it was such an honor to be associated with him.
It is true, I think, that Goethe was a great egoist. This is what his contemporaries said about him. But unlike many egoists, he was able to make use of this in concentration on self for a productive purpose and to make use of it generously. He gave himself above all to the world in his writings. He gave himself, frankly, in his life a great deal too.
Even Goethe, after all, was a mere mortal, and no one was more aware of this than he was. He abhorred death and hated to deal with it. He avoided his wife's bedside when she was dying, and he detested the story of the crucifixion. For Goethe, the material world, colors, light, sensual beauty, and everything that was life-affirming were sacred. Yet he was capable of staring death in the face, and he did. In the case of his young friend Schiller, who died at the age of 46 in 1805.
Schiller was first buried on the St. Jacob's Cemetery here in Weimar, and in 1821 his skull and bones were taken from this first grave, and the skull was brought to Goethe for one night. He kept it in his study and wrote in this night also a poem about the skull and time and so on.
Strange vessel, fountainhead of sapience, how dares my hand to hold you? Precious prize, which from decay I snatch with reverence and into free air, freely there to muse, out into sunlight, piously bear hence.
For Goethe himself, death came many years after it did for the young Schiller. Goethe died in his home in 1832 when he was 82 years old. At Goethe's request, Schiller was buried at his side on a quiet hill on the edge of Old Weimar. And their graves have become a place of pilgrimage. For Goethe, life was passion, change, and an untiring quest. To tarry, to repose, is to become part of another realm that is not of this world.
O'er all the hilltops is quiet now. In all the treetops hearest thou hardly a breath. The birds are asleep in the trees. Wait. Soon, like these, thou too shalt rest. Thou too.
You've been listening to Oral Tapestry, devoted today to the poet Goethe, who was born 250 years ago this week. The program was produced and presented by Marijke van der Meer. Sound balance was by Marcel Corfage. In part two of the program next week, we take a closer look at Goethe's masterpiece Faust, hailed as the greatest play since Hamlet. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.